Welcome to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and I'm your host of the show about writers and writing. We hope you've had a good couple of weeks. It's nice to have you back again. Pour that second cup of coffee and find a comfortable chair. And don't forget to have some writing material, because we always give websites and email addresses and information that you might want to have, including titles of books written by our guests that you may want to jot down. If you were listening a few weeks ago, we had a very entertaining show with two fine writers. Jim Lanier was interviewing Stephen Allen Holmes about all of Stephen's work. Now the tables are going to be turned. Stephen is going to be the guest host, and he's going to be interviewing Jim. And listen closely. If you didn't catch it last time, these two guys are very funny. Their humor is dry. You have to be paying attention because you're going to hear some fun stuff. We'd like to welcome you again, and I'm going to turn this right over without any further ado to Stephen Allen Holmes. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, thank you. I am Stephen Allen Holmes, also called Steve, and other names which are too numerous and unmentionable. And I'm here, luckily enough, to introduce Jim Lanier. I have to tell you that Jim is probably one of the most original and wonderful writers of short stories and poems that it's been my pleasure to encounter in my long lifetime. I think he will be one of the most successful writers if he can gather a following. And I think that one of the things we try to learn at Manzanita Writers Group, the Writers Unlimited, is to market as well as write. So if you're already a writer, come on down and we'll share what we know. At any rate, I'm going to introduce Jim now as the sleekest storyteller in the history of mankind. Jim, could you start off by giving us a story, telling us, relating one of your stories, so that the readers get an idea of what you do?
Well, yeah, there's an electronic book I've written called The Bizarre Bazaar, and I'll read the title story from that. There's a story by the name, and there's also a poem by the same name. This one is the short story, The Bizarre Bazaar. Leslie Hampton Uppington Barnard Smythe was trudging wearily through the crowded streets of Cairo, one of the few people to be seen not wearing traditional Arab garb, one of the few to be thinking thoughts non-Mohammedan. He found it difficult to ignore the beggars and vendors without the guidance of his manservant, Chadwick, from whom he had been unceremoniously separated in the claustrophobic crush of cacophonous humanity. After several minutes of seemingly mortal turmoil, he found a clear space and breathed wonderfully perfumed fresh air, a heavenly aroma. He found himself before a gate, a sign atop which proclaimed, in English, The Bizarre Bazaar. Stepping through the arched gateway, he was greeted by a swarthy, plump man wearing a fez, who looked Leslie up and down and said, "Welcome, welcome. You are English, no?" He smiled, exposing two gold teeth. "Why, yes, I am. How could you tell?" Leslie asked, removing his pith helmet and wiping the inner band with a monogrammed, lilac-scented handkerchief, which he took from the pocket of his jodhpurs. He also wiped a spot of soil from his knee-length riding boots. "Your regal bearing, Effendi," the man smiled unctuously. "Subjects of Her Majesty's Empire fairly shine compared to the wretched lower classes. Please, step out of the sun, into the cool shade of this unworthy establishment." "My name is Hakim," he said, bowing. "Well, it is quite stiflingly hot," Leslie allowed. "What is it you do here? It smells so like... Hakim led Leslie toward the rear of the alleyway, shaded by exquisite, colorful tapestries, which filtered the bright sunlight, sweeping his arm and saying, "Like the Garden of Eden, the cradle of humanity, like heaven on a Tuesday. Welcome to the last place on earth you need to shop." "Well, that sounds brilliant. Top drawer," Leslie said, enjoying the cool, fragrant air. He could smell incenses and spices and sweet perfumes, a welcome change from the dust and human odors of the street from whence he had just retired. What do you sell? First, allow me to offer you tea, Effendi. Very good of you. I am quite parched, Leslie said. Hakim produced a sterling silver tray carrying an exquisitely wrought high-necked silver teapot with a gracefully curved spout. He poured a generous portion of liquid into a delicately decorated blue and white china cup and presented it, bowing and saying, "Please, special for you, Effendi." An exotic aromatic pleasure wafted up from the cup, and intense oral satisfaction accompanied the first sip of the sweet, syrupy potion. "I say, that's quite good," Leslie exclaimed. His eyes wandered toward the back of the alley, which seemed festooned with all manner of items, shiny and sparkly or dark and mysterious. The scene seemed to shimmer before his eyes, making it impossible to gauge the distance. "Look at all these things," he exclaimed in wonder. "Soon, Effendi, very soon," Hakim smiled. "Rather than wasting the time of an important man of the world such as yourself, I offer my services at no charge to narrow the field, to winnow, to separate the couscous from the chaff, and only present the things you truly do not need." Leslie took another gulp and wondered if he had heard correctly. "You mean what I truly need, I'm sure." He smiled, a superior smile. "Begging your pardon, Effendi, and I would rather cut my living beating heart from my breast and have you grind it against the stones and cinders with your heels of your well-crafted Italian boots than disagree with your grace, but no. Outside those gates," he said, waving his hand dismissively in the direction from which Leslie had entered, "there is an entire world of things you truly need. I sell only the finest, most costly things you do not need, selected carefully with your lack of needs in mind." Leslie looked at his cup, which had emptied, but was quickly replenished by Hakim. He seemed to sense a slight tingling in his lips and at the base of his neck. He asked, "Sorry?" "For one such as yourself, Effendi, with a finely honed sense of discrimination and entitlement, who could expect less than the very best commodities?" "Righto," Leslie found himself agreeing, although he had not quite followed what it was he was agreeing to. "As you may find, Effendi, Hakim has a great knowledge of these things, the mundanely unnecessary and the unimaginably extraordinarily unnecessary. And by finding out some of your highly cultured non-preferences, Hakim will soon be able to sell you only those things you truly do not need. Need, after all," Hakim leaned forward conspiratorially, "is a condition of the base masses, the vile, unwashed, and unkempt, with whom you have so recently found yourself confronted, assaulted, confounded. Is that a Halston pocket watch, Effendi?" Leslie presently registered that this was a question he should answer, and nodded vaguely, reaching toward his pocket watch. "Very good, Effendi. Most tasteful." The watch was suddenly swaying from its chain, looped over Hakim's finger. "And very much in accord with my perception of you. Nowhere in Cairo would you find another man with a Halston pocket watch. And you no doubt have your clothes custom tailored at Tailors of Harcourt?" "Spot on," Leslie cried enthusiastically. "Just two more questions, Effendi, if it please you. Would you say your taste in purchases differs substantially from those of your father, who no doubt owns a seat at Lloyd's?" "Sir," Leslie cried, "you astound me with your perspicacity. Amaze me, I say. Confound me." That will do for now, I think.
Well, I'd heard a different ending to that, but I want to know, what is the theme within your own mind of that story?
Consumerism and how it's ruining us all.
Okay, and you think you're ruined?
Well, I don't have a Halston pocket watch, and I'm not sure anyone has a Halston pocket watch. I made that up. But, you know, the Bazaar Bazaar started as the poem, and it was about basically an American shopping mall and how things that you purchase fall apart before you can get them out to your car. in the vastly overcrowded parking lot. So I see this as one of the difficulties about our society in general, that happiness is connoted to reside within purchases.
All right. Now, what gave you the idea for this story?
I live near a mall. I don't live near a mall anymore, I have to say. And, of course, I've thought about this quite a bit, and that's why I live so far away.
You wrote a book or a short story about the end of the road, and that talks about how far away you live, or at least I think that's about you and how far away you live from civilization. Is that true?
Yes, I live in an unincorporated portion of the country next to Dick Cheney, an undisclosed location, and I like it that way, except that I have to duck frequently when I hear shotguns going off.
Okay, Jim. He's got me laughing again. This is Linda Field, and this is Manzanita Voices, and I would hope that you listeners out there are enjoying this as much as I am. Again, you have to listen for the dry humor that sometimes is not so dry. We'll be right back after some messages to more of Jim Lanier and our guest host Steve Holmes and Manzanita Voices. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field. We're talking today with our guest host, Steve Holmes, and our subject, Jim Lanier, who, by the way, Jim was talking before the break about being, he moved away from shopping malls because he doesn't like being around that sort of thing, and he's way out in the boonies. And I didn't know that our former vice president was your neighbor, Jim. That's really interesting to know. Jim lives in a straw bale house that he and his wife built, and they are truly off the grid. Maybe you'll get to hear a little bit of that in this segment. Okay, Steve?
Absolutely.
Want to hear some more?
Jim, I don't know about you being off the grid. You're on the web, aren't you?
Yes, it's amazing, my versatility. I don't even have an internet hookup at home, but I've managed to do it all, as they say.
Well, tell us about your website and where we can get your works.
The website is jimlanieronline.com, and I have a blog on there if you put /blog after jimlanieronline.com. You'll see some little things that I put on there. Oh, also, I'm on the Twitter. You've heard of the Twitter, Steve?
I Twitter a lot in my sleep, but otherwise, no.
You should. I think they have a kind of mask you can put over your face that'll help with that. But the Twitter, if people would like to follow me, it's amazing the terminology that you have to get used to. But I'm at WriteSing, WriteSing, on the Twitter, and that's because I write and I sing. Get it?
Got it. In fact, you perform every week, do you not, in Angels Camp?
Well, we won't get into my love life or anything. But I do play the guitar and sing frequently in the Motherlode area.
Well, give yourself a plug. Where are you going to be performing next?
Let's see. I have to fast forward in time to when this will be coming out on the radio. I have gigs frequently at Alchemy Restaurant in Murphy's. So there's one coming up the first Tuesday in July.
Okay. Now, with respect to your website, can I buy your book there?
No. The website has a what they call a link. I'm making little apostrophe motions with my fingers as I say that because Those of you who know the computer will know what a link is, hopefully. But you have to go to Amazon.com or to BarnesandNoble.com in order to get an electronic version of my book. And it's only available in electronic form thus far. So it's an e-book. You can download it onto a Kindle or a Nook if you happen to have such implements. I don't personally. I have a laptop computer, again with the little apostrophes in the air. And you can get an app that you can read the e-books on the computer. So that's what I do.
Okay, getting back to your book, The Bizarre Bazaar, I just want to tell the readers that there are delightful stories and poems that sometimes have to do with the stories, and you're going to laugh, probably out loud. And if you don't, then Jim will happily write another story and try to get to you. But he's the only person I've ever said who has a preface to forward the American edition and a forward to the forward and notes on the English translation and an afterword to the afterwards and a self-review at the end of his book. So what would you say in your self-view that the audience should hear now?
I do it all, I tell you. You know, these are all concepts to me, the forward and the afterword, and they don't have a term for the in-between words, I guess, and that's what writers do, is the in-between words, typically. So I did those, and then I thought, well, I need to bracket those with more words, and, you know, I'm a wordsmith. And so I did that, and I thought it was kind of cute, personally. I aim for high humor. I usually end up with irony and low bathroom humor.
Well, and with respect to your way of writing, how would you describe it? I would say that it's almost stream of consciousness, and if you could remember the 60s, it might have been something that you originally came across in the 60s.
Well, I came up with what I think is a very succinct description of my writing style. Imagine Philip K. Dick meets Douglas Adams at the restaurant at the end of the universe for tea, but they decide instead to ingest all of the pharmaceuticals in Hunter's briefcase and take in the floor show. I'm the floor show, basically. That's my writing.
Okay, so I take it that Douglas Adams and P.K. Dick were your role models in crafting your stories?
I enjoy their writing, and, you know, they're entertaining to me, and that's why I write, is to entertain people. But, you know, it's, I'm sure, not for everybody, but I do try to keep it light enough to where you'll laugh somewhere in there, and if you don't, why... send me an email, and I'll take back the electronic book from you, and I'll send you a refund in virtual dollars.
Very good.
I'll fax that to you.
Excellent, and you live in a place where there's no fax or electronics that function.
Well, there are facts. There are facts of life, and there are cold, hard facts. That's where I live.
Is there any kind of objective reality in your stories?
I'm not sure there's any kind of objective reality anywhere at all. So that's why I write what I write, is because, you know, people get kind of tied up in the mundane day-to-day, workaday world, and they forget that they're only bounded by their imaginations and where they put their minds, and so I kind of try to blaze some trails into places where they would not have ordinarily gone. You know, and the fact, the cold hard fact of writing is that all these stories have already been told. I'm not going to come up with something that hasn't been around since at least Mickey Spillane. So what I do is jump ship and go to some sort of alternative universe or some kind of interior mind location where I can do anything I want. And the other thing that I like to describe my writing by saying is it's fiction that's stranger than truth. Because, and that's a pretty high bar, I'm sure you'll agree, because you only need to pick up the newspaper, if people still have newspapers these days, and look at what goes on in the world, and if you're not too seriously caught up in the drama of it, you can pull back and think to yourself, this is just bizarre. So when I say that I've written a bizarre bazaar, that's the sort of thing that I'm aiming at.
So in Planet Tweedle, you have a look back at our culture at this time. And what were you trying to achieve in that story?
Well, Planet Tweedle is a science fiction story, and so, you know, I think what's great about science fiction is that you can explore contemporary issues. And so the contemporary issue I was exploring in that is the great gift of the American public, so to speak, in situ.
And that needs explanation, because I'm sure nobody understands what the great of the American public in situ means. So, please.
Well, and that's true of a lot of what I write. They're words, and they mean something, but I'll leave it up to the reader to decide whether in conjunction they mean anything. The planet Tweedle is actually set off its orbit because of certain factors which you could call religious or political and dietary. And it ends up, unfortunately, getting too close to its nearest star, and it wipes out all life on the planet. So I think we can learn something from that, don't you, Steve?
Oh, I think so. I think your writing is not only amusing, but also thought-provoking. And probably that's not your goal, because you don't like to provoke anything. But do you really think that originality is not permitted in our culture?
Oh, well, you're talking to somebody who lives off the grid and in a house that I built out of straw bales. And, you know, I think a lot of people focus too much on the sort of accepted norms to put their lives together. And so I'm a big advocate of looking at life and making decisions and not being too much influenced by the sort of things that most people call life.
Okay, Jim, I'm going to ask you a few things about your background when we come back, and I hope you can prepare something wonderful for us to hear.
And we are looking forward to coming back. If listening to what Jim was just saying about being original and having to conform to society's norms and everything, if anybody has ever had to deal with their local planning department when they are building a house or remodeling a house, you know what it's like to, you can't be too original. You just have to conform to certain things, or you end up in a whole hornet's nest of problems. I think I speak from experience. This is Linda Field, and you're listening to Writers Unlimited, and we're having a great chat with Jim Lanier and Stephen Holmes. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to Manzanita Voices. I'd like to just give some information on how to contact us before we get back to Steve and Jim, because I do like to hear from the audience. I'd like to know that you're listening out there and how you're enjoying the show, what suggestions you might have for us. You can contact me here at the station at writers@kvgcradio.com. writers@kvgcradio.com. And also, we are part of Manzanita Writers Press, which is we have two websites for you to go and find out more about our writers group, Writers Unlimited, and the press. We're publishing quite a few books these days. Go to manzapress.com. That's M-A-N-Z-A press, P-R-E-S-S.com, all one word, and manzanitacalifornia.org. M-A-N-Z-A-N-I-T-A, California.org, all spelled out. We look forward to hearing from you, and check out the websites to find out what we're doing in your area to publicize our books and come and meet our authors. Okay, without any further ado, let's get back to Steve and Jim.
Hi, this is Steve Holmes again, and I have to tell you that I find Jim's stories fascinating because they're like a train of thought, a free association that has a theme. And it's a wonderful technique and really creates enjoyable reading. That tells me that Jim must have had a very unusual past. And so let's ask Jim to tell us a little bit about how he came to be the writer that he is now.
Well, I've always loved reading. I was not a sickly child as a child, but at one point I did have some medical problems. But I always loved reading even before that and after that. And I'm the kind of person who can learn from watching or observing something. So writing has always been fairly self-evident to me. And I minored in English, so I had quite a bit of formal schooling in reading and writing. And but at the same time, I was very interested in music, so I spent a lot of time going to music school, and it's taken a long time to get to the point where I felt I really had something worth writing about.
Well, it seems to me that you include things like quantum physics and mathematics in your stories as key plot elements. So I'm wondering if you had that kind of background also.
No, my major in college was actually middle school math education. So I had a lot of math. And just as a kind of light reading, I like to read physics books and keep up with what's going on in the cutting-edge particle physics. There's also quite a few books about the link between modern, what they're finding out in modern particle physics, and the Eastern religions and different religions in general, which I find to be the most interesting thing, because physics tries to explain reality to us, and the reality that it's explaining best seems best summed up in the words of various Eastern philosophies. So if you're interested in kind of finding your own reality, that seemed like a reasonable place to start the inspection. So I've always kept up with it because it's interesting. Things that people do that are beyond sort of mundane life are interesting to me, and physics falls into that. So, yeah, I kind of read books on physics just for pleasure.
What's the hardest part of being a great writer?
I'll let you know when I find one. I hardly think of myself as a great writer.
Well, hardly, you know, go ahead and think of yourself as a great writer. By the way, writing a book is one thing, and editing is another, and marketing is a third. Can you outline for our listeners that process as far as your own life is concerned?
Well, yeah, I wrote a book mostly because I joined the writers group. Writers Unlimited has been essential in the writing of my book, and having other writers to bounce things off and to review your work is just vital if you want to do some writing. So no matter how well you do it, it can be better, and it can benefit from peer reviews, or so to speak. But after I had the bulk of the short stories and poems and essays that comprise the book, The Bizarre Bazaar, I started, of course, thinking about getting it out where people could read it, because that's what a writer would like to happen in an ideal world. And so I figured out pretty quickly that the best way to do that, most efficient way, was to publish as an e-book. And so I found out about publishing e-books, and I was able to format the beast and put it onto Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And so that was the first step, which got it up there, and then I can tell everybody, boy, I'm a published author. But the real reality behind the writing thing is that that book, The Bizarre Bazaar, is one of billions and billions of books on Amazon. And so you then, if you want people to read your work, have to market it. And can they say market on the radio?
Absolutely.
The FCC won't bleep that.
It's a dirty word to writers, but not to anybody else.
It is. And so I'm grappling with that, and I have to admit that the Twittering, is that what you call it, that I do, is a marketing attempt. So, you know, somebody goes and sees me at Right Thing. Every once in a while, I'll put a link to the blog or something that's going on with the book sales or whatever. And I'm on Facebook, so although I'm not going to tell people how to find me on Facebook, but you could probably look for me as Jim Lanier. I don't make up anything. You know, I write fiction, but not on Facebook. That's all true information. Well, except the dates of birth and the various personal information, which I don't think should be shared with people, because, you know, I may want to try to find a job someday, and, you know, they could mine into the Facebook stuff and find embarrassing pictures of me, you know, having drinks with the royals, things like that. So I want to avoid that.
All right, and speaking of finding you, how do you spell your last name? Jim is relatively easy. It's G-E-Y-M, I'm sure.
The last name is L-A-N-I-E-R. So it's not linear. It's a non-linear name. For those of you who know a little more about math, that was a really funny joke there. But L-A-N-I-E-R is the correct spelling for my name.
Well, my experience is that it's easier to find a book on either Barnes & Noble or Amazon if you know the title. So besides it being Bizarre Bazaar, for those of us who don't spell, can you spell that out?
No. Well, I could.
You
know, my next book is going to have a lot easier title to spell and type, particularly. The Bizarre Bazaar, the first bazaar is B-I-Z-A-R-R-E. The second one is B-I-Z-A-A-R.
B-A.
B-A-Z, yes. B-A-Z-A-A-R. So, Bizarre
Bazaar.
So now
you've confused everyone.
Yeah.
Let's try that again.
Go ahead.
No. spell your title for us so that they can look on.
I have to be typing it in order to BIZARRE BAZAAR.
I want to go to one of your stories that's like a Shutterhouse movie, and that's the Rocket Man. Tell me how you came up with that. Or if we have a break, wait till tell me afterwards.
The Rocket Man is the is kind of a an homage to Ray Bradbury. I loved reading Ray Bradbury's science fiction as a lad, and there's kind of a sadness to it because he was writing about, trips to the rocket port, and he'd be taking off for outer space, and kind of a great hopeful future, and it turns out that that was not what happened in reality. So the story is about a man who sees himself as a rocketeer guarding humanity from some sort of alien invasion, and it goes on from there, but changes quite a bit.
You're always good at having surprise endings, aren't you?
Okay, well, as I listen to this, I'm going to date myself here by saying that as I listen to Jim talk, I would love to see him, if we could do something supernatural, I would love to see Jim paired with Rod Serling, because he sounds so much like Rod Serling to me when he talks. And those of you who watched early television will know what I mean. Because we all watched the same shows back then. This is Linda Field, host of Manzanita Voices. And again, our guest host today is Steve Holmes, and he's interviewing author Jim Lanier. And we hope you're enjoying the show. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and I'm enjoying this show so much, I'm going to turn it right back over to Steve Holmes and Jim Lanier.
So, Jim, one of the things you say in your work is that I think there's a purpose to pain, and Have you experienced a lot of pain in your life, and is that a necessary element for being a good writer?
Well, you know, pulling from my musical background, I'd have to say you gotta pay the dues to play the blues. So, yeah, you know, that was one of the things that experience helped me write that. But, you know, everybody's got pain. I'm not the only person who owns pain, so I thought it was an interesting way to look into not only that issue of pain, but reincarnation and how relationships keep going on metaphorically through death, but that's just a metaphor, of course.
What would you say is the primary theme, if there is one, to the works that you've produced so far in Bizarre Bizarre?
Oh, I don't know. I try to be entertaining, and there are a lot of different subjects which I find entertaining personally, and I hope other people do as well. Sort of the shaking out from the ordinary perception of things, and so I, in my writing, try to do that by making it a little unsettling and going into places where no story would boldly go of its own.
You're sort of an iconoclast then.
Yeah, wouldn't you hate to be... just what's the opposite of iconoclast? A moron?
Your words, not mine. So you write primarily short stories, poems, and essays. Why is that? Why don't you go into novels? Because you certainly have enough material to create a long story.
One of the fun things I find about writing, what I do, is that I start with an idea and I start writing, and when I get done, it's done. And that wouldn't be true of the novel form. And the other thing about novels is I think they're overrated. I think especially, you know, these days, people don't have enough time to read novels. They should read short stories and poems. That way you get more bang for your buck.
Well, TV certainly presents a lot of short stories in serial form, where they have, for instance, NCIS. They have little episodes. Have you thought of putting together a series of your shorter stories as sort of episodic to a single theme?
I, in fact, have a couple of stories about, the protagonist is a young lad, not unlike myself, but who has various adventures, and so I may at some point have enough of those that I could call it a book if you want to. But, you know, I think it's too much of a constraint right at this point, because things occur to me, and, you know, to try to format them more carefully than I do, I'd have to be a different writer than I am.
Well, speaking of formatting, which I also assume includes making changes to what you initially write, what's your writing process?
Oh, I sit down in front of usually the computer. Occasionally I get so interested, and, you know, if it's a cloudy day, you can't always count on your photovoltaic electric. So I'll write it down, jot it down by hand. But generally I sit down and I start typing, and it pretty much types itself. I don't have to think about things too much. I think, personally, that's what I like about writing, is not having to over-plan them or anything. You mentioned the stream of process of consciousness kind of feel to the stories. That's the way they come out, and that's what I find interesting in trying to bring out, is that when something happens in a story, it's not the end of the story, and it's not something that you know what's going to happen. If people knew what was going to happen by the end of one of my stories, I would refund their virtual dollars again.
Well, in letting the stream of consciousness work, do you ever go back and polish your stories, look for words that you've used too often, and punctuation and that sort of thing?
No, I like to trot my work out for the writers group, and sometimes they'll mention things like that. But in general, I get the feeling that they're so baffled by what I do that they don't really, they're speechless. Is that what you would find true?
No.
Okay.
I find us all laughing by the time you finish reading one of your stories, because not only are they amusing, they're awe-inspiring with the turns of your mind. So I am surprised that you haven't been recruited by the CIA because of the deviousness of the structure of your stories. But I assume that that's just something natural in your makeup. Well, tell us a little bit about your personal life, but first tell us a little bit about a work you did called Dragonfly.
Well, I'm sorry, I interrupted Steve in his flow of consciousness, but I did want to read, because you mentioned the CIA, a little poem I wrote called Dragonflies. The dragonflies are watching me. They monitor my place. The cameras that fill their eyes broadcast scenes into space, where satellites relay the feed to distant secret halls, where scientists and bureaucrats watch me up on the walls. The dragonflies are really spies sent by the bureaucrats who utilize their little eyes as well as flies and gnats. They want to know, where do I go? What do I hear and see? Extrapolations of my thoughts fill file cabs A through Z. And when the evil genius believes he knows my brain, he'll take it out and change it round and slip it back again. I watch the little dragonflies. They seem so innocent. But now I know that they all go and tell the government. So it may seem the evil team will win this time, and yet I'm working on a lizard that will end this evil threat.
Delightful. Sort of 1984 in its picture of our political future and the governing of our conduct. Was that what one of the things you were trying to get across in that poem?
Yeah, I think there's a real possibility of trouble from the government when the government takes too much away from our freedoms. And so I'm an advocate of freedoms, and although I'm not active politically, my basic feelings are the government should not be quite as involved as it is.
And is that the reason that you don't like to go on the web, because everything that goes on the web is traced and recorded?
It is.
It is.
I gotta go.
Okay. Well, we've had a delightful time here. But do you think your work is very different from that of the other writers in the writers group, Writers Unlimited? And if so, what are the other things that writers are presenting that you enjoy and perhaps like to put into your own work?
Well, if there were other writers doing the same kinds of things that I do, I'd give it up and take up freelance garbage collecting or something. So that wasn't my idea, to find other people who think like I do or write like I do. And one of the joys of going to the writers group is listening to other writers. And you know, there is a sort of nice aesthetic to writing of any kind. If you find somebody who writes well, it doesn't matter whether they're doing a mystery or a fantasy or a more realistic kind of work. Things that work are not easily quantified. There are all kinds of ways that a piece of writing can affect you, and it's always fun to go and look for that, and I often find it from other people, such as yourself, Steve. You're a fine writer, and I've enjoyed your work.
Well, thank you. And I think you're probably the most delightful writer in the group, except perhaps for Glenn Wasson, who has a different kind of humor.
I'm sending out somebody to take care of Glenn now.
That's wonderful. Now, I guess we've used up our time, and I want to thank you all for listening. Please come to our Writers Unlimited group meetings, because we can use more original minds, and we want to see what you're doing. Come on.
Yes, we do. We want to meet you. We want to get you going on your writing projects, because I know that before I joined a writer's group, I sat around a lot of times thinking about writing, but I didn't get started until I put myself in the company of writers, where you just get motivated and you love hearing all these things that they're doing, and it gives you the permission to do it yourself as well. That is Writers Unlimited. We meet the second and fourth Monday of every month, 6:30, in the Calaveras County Arts Council building on Main Street in San Andreas. Parking is in the back, or you can park on the street and walk to the building. It's okay, but usually we enter from the back. Also, the contact information I have for you. Again, I'd love to hear how you're enjoying the show, what ideas you have, what comments you might want to make. Please email me, Linda Field, but don't put my name in the title, at writers@kvgcradio.com. That's the email address for this show, writers@kvgcradio.com. Also, Stephen Allen Holmes has his website at stephenallenholmes.com. And you can contact Jim Lanier at jimlanieronline.com. And when you do that, you might want to ask him what he meant when he said death is a metaphor. I'm interested in that. What the heck did you mean, Jim? Anyway, thanks very much for listening. One more thing. Please go to manzapress.com, our website for the writer's publishing company. It tells you all about who we are, what we do. We publish books. We encourage writers. Manza Press, manzapress.com. This is Linda Field, Manzanita Voices. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.